oceans, and upon high seas, fish full of mercury. Underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby are nice. Mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from sand? Can't you stand?
All right. That is another anthem of not just a generation, but of an age. Mercy, mercy me, the great Marvin Gaye. It is Tuesday, October the 16th, and you're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is the day of the great debate, round two. And in a way, that music is most appropriate. Mercy, mercy me. And you just have to say, my gosh, what is going on? What's going on in our political life today? So today, we will do an open phone segment where we get to catch up with your thoughts and opinions. There's much that I have on my plate. But, you know, I like the idea of this program serving as a kind of sounding board. We don't get to talk to each other much and enough, I should say. We need to have more people throwing ideas around, putting them in the pot so that we can appreciate what's coming through and get a flavor of what people are thinking. So why don't I announce that number, 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. You know my sentiments. I'm not very excited about what has been passing for political leadership by any of these parties, and especially as it relates to our rights as individuals, as citizens, people who are supposed to have equal or relatively meaningful access to the throttle and brake of government. I do not believe that that exists. I believe it has become a kind of cruel inside joke that elections become an exercise of futility and a great scam. We know that the people who are going to be presented to us for election are not people that we select, that a process, a very closed process, produces them. And we are now expected to just give a stamp of approval to a process in which we've had absolutely no input. We don't know these folks. We don't know what they stand for. We don't know what their commitment is. We don't know them to be organically grown material. They do not come from us, of us. They're not for us. And yet we are expected to demonstrate our commitment to this concept of democracy by showing up like lemmings in the voting booth and casting our ballot when we have done so as a premeditated exercise by a power system that we do not control, then we would have been participants in the democratic process. It is a cynical view. It is not our view, but it is a cynical view of a power elite who are actually interested in one thing and one thing only. And what they're interested in is maintaining control. But of course, we tie that into all the other subtexts that are equally important. Racial issues are very important. I talked yesterday about the fact that in this process of debates, as we are witnessing these debates, the exclusion is total. All parties concerned are guilty, and we have an apartheid system. It's right in your face. It's not hiding. It's not trying to disguise itself. It's not trying to morph into something else. It is exactly what you see, a shutout. The media are part of it, a critical part of it. They are shutting people out. I talked yesterday about the fact that the Native American Journalists Association, the Hispanic Journalists Association, the Black Journalists Association had all suggested questions since they were shut out of participating in any meaningful way as moderators. They submitted some questions and some issues, some topics that should be covered from the point of view or the relevance that these topics would have to the constituencies that they are in touch with. And they were all ignored, absolutely ignored. So the media had done its part in maintaining a shutout. You're not going to know anything that they don't want you to know. Your concerns are not necessarily theirs, and theirs are the concerns that will prevail. They are telling us in so many ways that you are outside of the process of control. Just get used to it, accept it, and move on, and we will all live happily ever after. The Democrats and Republicans all agree that they can participate in a very undemocratic process. We don't need, as the American people, as they call us, we do not need to hear a miscellany of views. We have no capacity to tolerate beyond two political parties. We can have infinite choice of cars that you may want to buy, clothes that you may want to wear, restaurants that you may want to dine at. But when it comes to politics, you can't handle more than two political parties, and they're the two, and therefore they're okay with that. So what's the problem? Where are the props? There are no props. Just get used to it. And they all agree, the media, the governmental apparatus controlling these debates, the political parties participating in them also say, hey, we're all in this together. Just us. We can sit down and decide who we want to let in and who we don't want to let in. So, you know, I understand the process. Where I find room for criticism is that there isn't enough, a loud enough opposition that says the United States, no aspect of public life should be reflective of apartheid. And what we have is informational apartheid. We have willing participants, and they are engaging in a shutout of the American people and a clear manipulating of their sentiments, manipulating information, manipulating even the facts to suit themselves. This is outrageous, and it's in your face. 1-888-874-4888. We'll take the short break. We have a couple of technical issues to solve, and we'll be right back right after this.
Love, love. I'm hanging on, we push each other. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Compared to what? Come on, baby. killing hogs. Twisted children are killing frogs. Poor dumb rednecks rolling along. Tired old ladies kissing dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it. Trying to make it real compared to what. Is what it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Half of one doubt they call it treason. We chicken feathers all the way out wonder. God damn it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what. Suck it to me.
Oh, great. Les McCann and Eddie Harris compared to what? The great anthem, the great protest anthem. 1-888-874-4888. One of the news items today, Hillary Clinton is taking the blame, taking the fall, assigning blame to herself for this debacle. It is now viewed that the Obama administration, the president himself, will be taking extra heat from the Romney camp for, as they see it, misleading the nation with respect to the attack on the U.S. Diplomatic mission in Benghazi on September 11th that claimed the life of the ambassador, Christopher Stevens, and three others back on September 11th. Hillary Clinton is now saying, oh, well, as Secretary of State, that's now my job. I should have stepped forward before, but I do take blame for this. And it gets to be ridiculous. The more that you look at these things and you say, is this how we're really functioning as a superpower in the world community? Do they not understand how stupid they make the country look? That this is the best we could do. This is the best we have. When the attack first occurred on September the 11th, it was said to be linked. In fact, the president went before the United Nations, you would recall, and linked the outbreak of protests and violence to the production of this miserable film, Innocence of Muslims, by some strange guy out there in California. And seemed to connect the two. Then a little while later, they said, oh, it was a spontaneous reaction. Those were the words that Clinton used to say. These were spontaneous reactions. Then Hillary Clinton said on September 20th that they were forming a panel to study what had happened. Well, already four people are dead. This is your diplomatic mission. This is not your basic diplomatic mission in your basic country. This is your diplomatic mission in the heat, in the very epicenter of the volcano. And September the 20th, you are now discussing about forming a panel to study what had happened, and then another week later, on September the 28th, the U.S. intelligence departments confirmed that what had happened was, in fact, a, quote, deliberate and organized terrorist attack. All right. Now, I understand that it is the nature of things. Sometimes when you see things right in the spur of the moment, you make a judgment, and sometimes it's not right. Sometimes it's completely incorrect. But we are supposed to have, especially in this region, we are supposed to have a superlative capability and capacity for generating intelligence. We're supposed to know these things. And a Secretary of State, I mean, she's been running around the world acting like she is the President of the United States with all the authority and so forth. And now that the Obama administration is up against the ropes, and somebody has said, hey, you know, it ain't fair to lay this on the president now. Somebody's got to take the heat off of him. He can't be saddled with the blame for everything that his minions are doing or not doing. And now she steps forward in this gesture of magnanimity and sincerity and transparency to say, actually, the buck stops with me. And that, too, is an act of cynicism, absolute cynicism. Hillary Clinton knows that given how this world works, it would not be likely that people would want to attack a woman. And the woman is the wife of a former president, the saxophone playing Bill Clinton. Who would want to attack for Hillary? And after all, this is an act of contrition. Never mind the fact that people are dead. Never mind the fact that there is absolute mayhem occurring in this part of the world. But it now becomes, who wants to upset Hillary? Who would want to attack Hillary Clinton? And so Obama and the Obama advisors are happy to hold her up as a kind of cardboard cutout, hold her up in front of him to say, well, look, here's a lovely white lady with a nice smile, and she is the wife of Bill Clinton and former first lady. Obviously, that is going to blunt any criticism. So it's an act of cynicism. This is how they think. They're not even sincere about this stuff. It is all politics, and politics is about what am I going to be able to get away with while appearing to be absolutely concerned and contrite. This is it. That's a ploy. Hillary Clinton, I mean, the question should have arisen about Hillary Clinton a long time ago. I have asked it, and you know, people thought that I was being outrageously critical. How did this woman become Secretary of State? How did Hillary Clinton become a political character in an elective sense? How do you go from being the wife of the president who designed a new room in the White House called the Oval Office? How do you go from being the president's wife, essentially, and your first shot out at elective office is you start at the top. You're a U.S. senator from New York. You never used to live in New York. So how did Hillary Clinton become a U.S. senator from the Grand Empire State of New York? As if it was a fair process. As if it was done on the basis of merit. As if she had paid any dues. The way was paved for her, cleared for her, because that's what corruption looks like. Shirley Chisholm, who had to fight her Democratic Party because they're trying everything possible to torpedo her run for the presidency, Hillary Clinton has no such trouble. She benefits from white skin privilege and from her elitist, she's not elitist in the sense that we normally use the word elitist in the sense that she was at the nexus of power. But she had no trouble taking advantage of her privileges. She could get things done. She can get her way. And Bill had a huge bill to pay, pardon the pun, because he had committed these transgressions. And the prize, the gift, was a U.S. senator's seat. That's how it's done. Now, you and I and the rest of the schmoes, if we wanted to have a political career, if we really were interested in public service, we would have to run for dog catcher and then run for cat catcher and then run for pigeon catcher and move up the ladder, and then we may have a shot at the city council. This woman moves right into the U.S. Senate. Boom. It's a done deal. And the Democratic Party, with a straight face, is trying to tell black folks and anybody else who would listen, that this was a fair process. Well, okay, now you're a U.S. senator. And guess what? Ambition doesn't stop there. You run for president, which was the plan all along. Well, you got busted. Your ambitions were clear, but you weren't nearly as gifted. You weren't nearly as popular as you thought. And instead, Barack Obama gets elected. The same guy that you tore to shreds, you and your husband tore to shreds, saying how incompetent he is. He needed so much on-the-job training, as if she did not. And all the things you said. And guess what? You still were able to muscle out of that arrangement a plum. You get to be Secretary of State with absolutely no qualifications for the job. None for the job. Madeleine Albright, before you, spent her practically her entire academic career studying international politics, studying international law, learning 5 or 7 languages, studying diplomatic law. That's what she had to do, studying with leading diplomats, mentoring, being mentored by them, apprenticing with them. Colin Powell had to, he had to go really high up the ladder and be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to get this job, the head military man, the numero uno of our military, before he could be considered for the job. And everybody knew that he was 10 times smarter than the president that he worked for. But he had to do that. Condoleezza Rice burned several tankers worth of midnight oil, reading books, preparing herself, learning languages, studying international law, preparing for the job, to be qualified for the job. And whatever people want to think, Henry Kissinger spent his life preparing for this job. Hillary Clinton doesn't have to do that. She's Billy's wife. And naturally, that qualifies her to be Secretary of State. Did anybody mention on-the-job training? No. Does Hillary Clinton speak any other language? No. Did Hillary Clinton go to school to prepare herself for a diplomatic post, international law? No. She just has to be Hillary. And now that the debacle is unfolding and Barack Obama is sent out to clean up after her, and now it's worse, that he actually could lose on this particular issue. He could lose a whole ball of wax based on this. It still is about, well, Hillary, we will now defend Hillary. We have to defend Hillary, even as she posits herself as protecting Obama. It is really about Hillary, a woman completely unqualified for this job. And the Democratic Party has the nerve to face the public and suggest that this was a fair process. She was the best candidate for the job. They did a great search. They assembled a wonderful search committee and searched the entire United States and interviewed thousands and thousands of people and got all kinds of resumes and vetted them. And in the process, Hillary came through as the best. No such thing. This is an arrangement. This is what nepotism looks like. This is what corruption looks like. And Barack Obama is in the thick of it. So now, on top of the woes that he has, he's got cleanup work to do, and Hillary Clinton is still at the center of it, as if, and being positioned as the great heroine of the moment. She is the greatest liability, but she's a monster that he created. So he'll have to live with it. Dave, you're on the air. Dave from Brooklyn.
Hi, Chase.
Hi.
Just a brief comment before I talk about what I want to talk about. The statement that, you know, I take full responsibility and all of that doesn't mean anything anymore. It's,
no.
Because there's no consequences to pay.
That's correct. That's the point.
Right. I wanted to go back a few days ago. You were talking about the alternative parties and the parallelism that they engage in. And I thought you were being a little unfair to them. You know, you were just demanding that they have a strategy for success. And of course, that's true, because you can't succeed unless you have a strategy for success. But the cards are pretty stacked against them, and you realize that. So
yes,
I was a little lost as to what strategy could possibly that you could have possibly meant, or even if you had such a strategy in mind. It's not like it's not, and you even at one time acknowledged that, of course, they don't have the same resources at their disposal that the two corporate parties have. And also the other thing is that it's what you said about, you know, just continuous failure dissuades people from supporting you. That is true, except that is that these parties never had support. They never had they always were up against the self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak, that, well, they can't win anyway. So, I mean, that's what they faced from the get-go. So I'm
just
wondering.
Yes, I mean, you're right, but let me further explain the point. If the whole idea is that you see yourself as a party as being in a position to present something that is a credible alternative, it means you have a duty. This should not be, not at this point, you know, 10 years ago, 25 years ago, great. I could understand it being, you know, the process of learning as you go. It is high time now to approach this thing on a very scientific basis. And if you're not ready, then don't jump in. Don't jump in until you are ready. And when I say ready, I don't mean that you take on a political battle on the same level as the major parties. That is not a sensible expectation. But I mean you take on a battle that you are clearly defined about, that you have a specific method of producing a result. And until you do, stay out of the fray and concentrate on planning. There's nothing wrong with that. But when people feel the need to show up every 4 years because, well, hey, it's a presidential election and we ought to be in it too, but you're not prepared to deliver. You don't have your system. You don't have your apparatus in fine form. And that's what I mean. When we have this repeated cycle of failure, after a while, you become irrelevant. Who wants to side with repeated failure? Who wants to join repeated failure? And that's my criticism. Look, I don't mean that it is realistic to expect, let's say, Party X to suddenly, win all these seats and all. No, it doesn't happen like that. But if Party X were to come forward and say, this is our philosophy, this is what we believe in, this is what we're striving for, and these are our goals. We are going to go after two congressional seats, we're going to get those two out, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. A very modest agenda that is perfectly within the capacity of the party to achieve, but to achieve it, not to wonder whether you could achieve it, but by the time you enter the fray, it should be because you have done enough homework and preparation to be reasonably secure that you can achieve the goals that you are articulating. And therefore, the investment that you're looking for from the public is worthy. That's what I have a problem with. I can't stand another cycle of parties pretending that they are still at the infancy stage. Get out of here. This is political science, folks. You study the science of politics. And you put something together that is workable and achievable. And you cannot expect that you're going to be able to raise funds, enlarge your party, propagate your philosophy, fight against the big guys, and do all of that and win all in the same time. You're nuts. And anybody who thinks that, okay, I will vote for this party, you also nuts. Because we have to demand that parties at this point, whatever they're presenting to us as an alternative is at least a credible, workable alternative. And I'm not talking, I don't want to hear philosophy that, I'm not interested in philosophy anymore. I'm interested in what is your plan of action? What is your structure? And that would tell me how committed and how serious you are. You see, that's my criticism.
Well, I'd say the three major parties, the Libertarians, the Greens, and the Justice Party, they all have programs. They all have what you said just a minute ago. They have a program laid out. They have their plans. But what they're facing is a blackout, a complete blackout by the media. And you said it too. The media are players in this whole thing, and they're part of the whole conspiracy. So it's a tough road to cross. Now, I'm wondering, the Green Party is, and the other parties, the Libertarians too, they're pretty much grassroots parties. People who have these strategies can and have joined and have put forth their suggestions, and I think all three of these parties are carrying out programs that are geared toward winning votes, but they have that tough hurdle of the media, the conspiratorial media, to overcome. And so I think that's where the blame should go, because, I mean, you would think that journalists, if somebody's running for president and they've raised enough money and they're on most of the ballots, you'd think, well, that qualifies them for coverage. But we can see this conspiracy playing out. What strategy could you, because I'm lost as to how to overcome that. I'm wondering if you have any ideas.
Church on Sunday, sleeping, not trying to duck the wrath of God. Preachers filling us with fright. They all trying to teach us what they think is right. They really got to be some kind of nut. I can't use it. I'm trying to make it real compared to what
I'm so sorry about that. We had a technical glitch, but we could cope. We've grown. We could cope. But the point I was making is that by the time a party or any political entity presents itself as an alternative, why should we not expect them to perform as if they're serious? I was saying the Libertarian Party, yes, and the Green Party, but in my community, I don't see them. So they clearly are not interested in me. I don't see any organizing going on. I don't see them reaching out to people in our community to say, well, here are our ideas, which are counter to what we're fighting against, and we hope you could join us. I don't see any of that. So they clearly are not interested in me. And I return the favor. We cannot expect at this point that people still are operating on a level of, you know, come on now, bear with us, and, you know, look, third-party politics, there are roadmaps about third-party politics. This is not new in the world of political science. Study the science of it and get your act together. Define a role and a goal that is achievable and go after it. Get it done. And if you get one modest victory, it is phenomenal. You make a big thing about it because it's the start of the next step and the next step. But this expectation, A, that it is wrong to even expect success, it is wrong to assume victory, it is somehow anti-progressive to want people to win. I want a winner, like anybody else. I want to win. And I'm tired of being in the psychological position of defeatism. I'm not a defeatist. I really am not. So why should I accept that in any political party that presumes to want to represent me? No, I am not signing on to that. However modest, however conservative, however small the identified goal, that is immaterial. What is important is you win at what you set out to do. Period. You know, I know it sounds very odd to say this kind of stuff, but it's true. How much longer can we stand the idea of anticipated failure? That, you know, here's another party, yet for the 15th time in a row, setting about the task of failing. Why bother? And why do you think that people ought to be taking you seriously? After a certain point, people should just go about their business. If you can't get to stage one and you see that as somebody else's responsibility, no. You're the owner of the idea. You're the owner of the alternative plan. You are the owner of something different that you think you could present. So take ownership of it. And that requires you to put together a scientific method of achieving your goal, because that's what you're asking people to do. You're not asking people to craft your approach along with you. You're saying, we have studied that. We have come up with some workable plans. Present them, but present a workable plan. They don't have workable plans. When you ask for plans and you ask for specifics, what you get are people telling you about their philosophies. I'm not interested in it at that point. I've suggested to you that by the time you reach the point of declaring yourself a party, you have a philosophy. But I'm interested in how do you execute? What is your structure? What is your strategy? How do you propose to win? That's how I know you're serious. That's how I know you're serious. It's like the nonprofit world. People are in the nonprofit world for year after year after year after year. The first question you should ask somebody in the nonprofit world is, when do you intend to go out of business? It's a shocking question. But it is a mindset that you should have if you are in the nonprofit world. The idea is to plan your own obsolescence. You plan to be irrelevant and unnecessary at a certain point, which means you are planning for success. The political outfits that have presented themselves as alternatives are simply engaging in large measure in futile efforts because they refuse to understand that one basic important thing is they ought to score a victory. At some point, it's important to score. It's important to win something. I don't care what it is, but it has got to be some record that you have set about a task. You identified an objective. You have executed your plan. You have achieved your objective. Now, there, and only there, is where you gain legitimacy, in my view. Other than that, you just, what James Brown says, the great philosopher, James Brown, you're just talking loud and saying nothing. And that's why I don't pay attention to libertarians. They are of completely no relevance to me. I don't pay attention to most of these parties, because they have shown by their disregard of me as having any value to them, I return the favor. 1-888-874-4888. As I said, we had some glitches today, but this happens, and we can barrel through. We're fine. We're good, strong folk. We can get through this, and so we will. 1-888-874-4888. You see, at some point, people have to get real. We've got to insist that though it is not enough simply to criticize what we don't like in the mainstream, the fact is we ought to take a hard look at the opposition because they're engaging in the same kind of crazy stuff. A lot of what passes for progressive thinking and liberal thinking and all this other kind of stuff is the same old with a different dress on. They're still engaging in aimless thought, aimless action, blowing really valuable time and resources on stuff that does not advance the cause. And they do so because they get a free pass. We are likely not to hold them to the same standard. So, you know, there's a lot of wiggle room we give them. And we don't need to do that. I remember telling the story about there was a group at one point in Brooklyn, highly critical of the Board of Education. And they were right. The Board of Education was, in fact, an agent of miseducation, undereducation, and in some cases, no education at all. We know that. That's been amply documented. But they presented themselves as an alternative. And I said, great. So I'd like to see your curriculum. Well, why did I say something like that? These folks attacked me viciously, said I was working for the CIA and the FBI and how anti-black I was and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm saying, no, you're presenting yourself as an alternative. You are actually pleading with black folks to put their children in your hands and to place a level of trust that you don't deserve. You have to prove yourself. You will be doing a heck of a lot worse than the Board of Ed by just for the sake of satisfying your ego needs, that you are walking around strutting your stuff and sticking out your chest about how you are an alternative to the miseducation of your youth. But at a certain level, I want to see your curriculum. I want to see what your plans are. I want to see how you intend to implement this other than normal curriculum. It's an extraordinary curriculum, this extraordinary approach. What is it rooted in? What are your methods? What informs your philosophy? And my gosh, serious, serious criticism. But of me, I didn't move not an inch. And it turned out the whole thing fell apart. The whole thing was a sham because these folks were not committed to institution building. And anybody with two good working brain cells could see that. But they come talking stuff. And I'm not interested in all your stuff that you're talking. I don't want to hear all of those fine words and emotional phrases and all that kind of stuff. I want to see your structure. I want to see your plan. I want to examine your curriculum. I want to talk about what is your methodology. I want to see metrics. I want to see when you intend to achieve what you set out to achieve. And only then do I take you seriously. That's the problem I have with third parties. But your homework tonight, yes, you guessed it, there's homework. Your homework tonight is to watch this debate in the way that we now have become accustomed to watching debates. We're looking for both verbal and visual and nonverbal communications and symbology. We're looking for all of that. But we're also listening for what is not said. We're looking for what is not shown. We are reading between the lies, and there will be many. And we are taking a look at what our current political situation is. It is a cynical exercise. It is a sales job. And it is the two people are combatants in a war for a very, very, very valuable prize. And this is what we're watching. This is not about the leadership of a country. This is about the stranglehold that one group wishes to have on the apparatus of government and power. So we are going to watch this debate tomorrow when you get on the air. We are going to be deconstructing this thing, adding to what we have observed so far in the first debate, from the vice presidential debate, and of course tonight's debate. We will see the cumulative effect of it all. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Again, so sorry about our little glitch, but we'll see each other tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Same bad time, same bad place. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
And where's that honey? Where's my God and where's my money? Unreal values, a crass distortion. Unwed mothers need abortion. Kind of brings to